Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another Rehearler Stepper. This time it's with John Finnemore. If you enjoy these podcasts and would like to give me some money, I am on tour from February right through to June 2016 with my show Happy Now. If that goes well, I can afford to do more Rehearler Steppers in June and then in the autumn as well. They're already booked in. I'm doing them. Don't worry about it. But anyway, go to richchain.com/gigs and you can see information about all of the tour dates. It's good. It's called Happy Now. It's all about whether happiness is attainable and possible. Look at my happy face. Anyway, here we are. Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who might vomit during this podcast. Genuinely might. So keep what go. If you're listening on audio, go to the video to watch this. Could be worth it. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Thank you. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Or I was in that cereal cafe in Hoxton where and everyone there had started calling this Rehelastipa. That's why I don't know what it must be getting around somewhere to all the cool people. They all have beards now, the cool people. It's confusing, isn't it, for someone like you? Because you still don't look cool. Just verify that for the people at home. You're getting quite a lot of footage of you. So I'm a bit hungover. I went out last night, which is quite rare, and we had a kind of pass because my mother-in-law was looking after our tiny baby. So we got really properly the most pissed I've been. You know, it's the downside of doing these on a Sunday afternoon, really. Is that's the bad thing, is you get out on a Saturday night. I'm really, seriously horrible. I went to Steve Coogan's 50th birthday party. It's difficult to know what to. I don't know how the hell he invited me, but I think he was being kind, inviting people from his even very early on in his career. And it's difficult, you know. Steve Coogan. Once you get Steve Coogan, he's the man who has everything. Can't get him. No point in getting him cocaine and prostitutes. He's got those. So I'd just give him a card saying I hereby rescind all my rights to the Alan Partridge character. That is like £1 million I've basically given him for his birthday. But I didn't. I got him some chocolates instead because I did think, I don't want to do that just in case. I do soon. Well, stick in the back of my mouth there. Seriously, it was awful. We were going to just stay for the first bit, and but then we stayed till... I stayed up till, like, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm 48 years old. It's pathetic. I do want to read... This is from a man called Rob Forth. Are you in, Rob? No. He was in last week's, or one of the last week's episodes, and we were talking about sterling silver, if you were there. He says, I was the beardy guy at the podcast on Sunday who told you the origins of the word sterling to describe the pound couldn't possibly come from silver, because as everyone knows, the pound was based on the gold standard. Well, it turns out I was completely wrong, and the gold standard only came in the 18th century. Prior to that, the value of the pound was in fact based on the value of a pound of sterling silver, like I said. Here's a link to the article that explains it further, telegraph.co.uk. Please feel free to out me as a fucking idiot that I am. In a cruel twist of irony, I contributed 60 of the aforementioned pounds sterling to the Kickstarter, thus guaranteeing there'll be video evidence of my wrongness. Oh, the humanity. So that is from... That's from Rob Forth. Rob Forth. That's kind of quite... It's like a good name for a burglar, isn't it? Go Forth and Rob. But anyway, there we go. You can have that as well, Andy. That's for you. And my other big news was I did a gig at the Albert Hall with Cliff Richard on Friday. I'm really hobnobbing, aren't I, with that. There was all sorts. It was Steve Coogan's party. There were so many people who'd be brilliant guests on Rehearsal. But I felt it was inappropriate to ask them. And I talked to Julia Davis, who I really wanted to get on. I've never talked to in my life before. And I was very drunk and very tired. And I said, yes, we've had your friend on. And then I couldn't remember Jessica Hines' name. And literally for a minute, just had to stand there until I went playing charades, basically. And, you know, your friend. She was in space. I mean, how embarrassing is that? So I don't think Julia Davis will be coming on. And if she does, I won't remember what her name is. I'm doing a gigs at the Royal Albert Hall on Friday nights, but comparing in the little room called the Elgar Rooms. I'm sure Edward Elgar is delighted I am swearing in his room. Cliff Richard was on the main stage. He was doing he's doing well for a 75-year-old man. Got away with Annie. So honestly, when I arrived there, it's always the interval, and his fans were kind of... I mean, they're really so ancient. They were all kind of hobbling along, and it was genuinely like being in a kind of benign episode of The Walking Dead. It really was. There wasn't a single person under 80 there, I would say. Though, you know, on the plus side, that did mean they were safe. So, they were safe. They were safe to be there. So, it was like being weird being heckled by Cliff Richard was playing, you know. He was calling me a devil woman all the way through my set. So it's hard to come back from that one. Anyway, look, we're going to crack straight on. Our guest today, he's probably best known as the narrator of the Dave programme, 24 Hours to Go Broke, which I'm sure you all watch. It's John Finnemore, ladies and gentlemen. It's John Finnemore. Here he is. Hooray. Come on in. Welcome. Sit down, pick up a microphone and talk into the microphone. It's very low tech. How are you doing? It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Very lovely to be here.
And what do you remember about the 24 Hours to Go Broke job?
I mostly remember was that they basically wanted... I mean, they never told me this, but it was clear from the script and from the direction. They wanted Dave Lamb. And I'm not Dave Lamb. No. I sort of did more and more of an impression of Dave Lamb. And they seemed happy with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember the episode I was in?
I do, yeah. You had a lovely time.
It was kind of an insane... I don't know if you saw the show. It's kind of... I like to hope that people don't see the stuff like that. Because they pay quite well, and it's quite an embarrassing show where you go and... We had to go to Armenia and spend as much money as we could.
It was an odd one, wasn't it? Because it felt like there was some... And people did criticise it. It felt like there was something a bit queasy. So you're given... The production company gave two comedians a big sum of money and they had to go to a poor part of Europe, but not like really poor, but quite poor, like Armenia or Iceland. Well, Iceland's not... No, it is. And spend it on stuff. And it kind of feels wrong. But then when you analyse it, there's nothing wrong about it. They're putting the money into a community. It's fine. Yeah. But it just doesn't feel right, does it?
It doesn't feel right. We did try to get
the money. You did make a lot out of that.
It was interesting because we were being criticised before it even started. And I did think, you know, I was queasy about doing it and a little bit. So I think this, you know, might be judged in the wrong way. But then I thought, you know, we want to try and get as much money to nice people as possible. Yeah. But you still, it was very difficult. It was something like, I think I'd spend... I don't even know how much it was, £10,000. Yeah. I think it might have been £8,000, because it was so difficult to spend £10,000 in Armenia. Right. Everything was so cheap. Yeah. So even going to the pot, we booked the presidential suite for an hour.
Yeah.
And it was still like 100 quid or something. So, and we went to a casino.
And there was
That money didn't go to the poor people of Armenia.
I remember now being in my little voiceover booth, realising that it was my job today to commentate on Richard Herring and David Baddiel feeding each other chocolates in dressing gowns. And yet, you know, when I told my careers advisor that's what I wanted to do, he laughed at me.
My favourite thing about it is we were in the presidential suite and we wanted to get like some sandwiches or whatever. But, yeah. And we rang down and the guy was so grumpy.
The most furious maitre d' in the world.
It was like room service going, he didn't want to bring us whatever he had and he didn't have any of the stuff we wanted. I enjoyed it, but there we go. I don't think anyone else did. So I've been having a lovely time this morning through my hangover listening to you on your various programmes, which I...
That is how their best experience. Yeah, when you wish you were dead.
Through a fog. But I mean, you've done. I mean, we were talking backstage about you. Obviously, do a lot of work on Radio 4. Mm-hmm. So you've got your own sketch show. You've got your own sitcom, which has just come to an end. And you do things like the Now Show.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to be. Interesting to me that you, as a writer. Writing for the radio is not very well paid.
No.
And not that many people necessarily hear what you're doing.
True.
which has kind of put me off. But there's an incredible standard to it. And I was asking, because I wondered if you had lots of writers on the souvenir programme, but you write that yourself as well.
No, I like some megalomaniac idiot. I write the whole thing. Yeah.
But that's a lot of work. How many series of the sketch
show? We're just about to do our fifth. Right. So, yeah, and each one is... 3 hours of material, and in order to get 3 hours of material I need to write 4 hours of material.
Right.
And I don't really have returning characters or catchphrases either.
No.
And I kind of made a rod for my own back there, because when it started, it was just at the like the peak of all that any sketch show that was on was all, you know, religiously catchphrases. And so I wanted to not, you know, like the same character just doing the same sketch in a different set. And I really wanted not to do that. And so now I've kind of committed myself to coming up with half an hour of entirely new ideas each episode. Yeah. But I love it. I mean, it's a job I always wanted to have.
Yeah.
And I get to do it with a gang of friends, which is a lovely feeling, and including Margaret, who works with you a lot. And I can't complain about it, because it's... And I have complete control over it. And that's, I suppose, perhaps the answer to your question about, you know, why work for radio if it's, you know, it's not well paid. But once they say you can do it, it's quite hard to get them to say... to commission it, but once they do, they more or less leave you and your producer alone
to
make the show. And so you can make the show that you think is the funniest possible, and then they can decide if they want any more.
Yeah, it's quite... I mean, sketches... I started writing sketches at university, as I presume you did as well. But even when I was doing it, it felt like quite an old-fashioned medium.
Oh, yeah.
And it's come back and forth a little bit. But it does... There's, I mean, a lot of your stuff has that kind of feel of being... while still being quite current and still being... It has a sort of nostalgic feeling to it.
Absolutely, and especially on the radio, that adds to that. And I do like a sort of... I like a sketch with a... I just think there's something about the classical structure and having a proper punchline, for instance, that all of my favourite sketches did. And so, I've become comfortable with literally opening a sketch with the sound, with an old-fashioned doorbell, his shop door going ding-ding, and me going, good morning, madam. Because sometimes that's the best, easiest way to get into a sketch. And to try too hard to avoid it, you know, you just end up with 30 seconds of dead time before you get to the first joke.
Yeah. But Cabin Pressure feels like a little bit... Is it a nod to things like the Navy Lark and stuff like that? It feels it has a...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know how conscious that was. There's definitely... There's also a kind of Dad's Army thing about the central dynamic of the one in charge who isn't confident to be in charge, and the second in command who really ought to be in charge. You know, that's straightforward, Mannering and Wilson.
Yes,
and so, I think it's got a lot of those things running through it.
You know, it's all really good what you're doing. You've worked really hard at it. you don't need to work that hard. It's the radio.
So I don't need to.
You don't need to work as hard as that because it's just going on the radio. So I feel sorry for you. Obviously, like with the with cabin pressure, I was listening. Thinking you must have worked for like two or three weeks on this one script.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No. And you know you've been paid maybe 500 quid. that's not. You know, don't work so hard. Just
phone it in more.
Don't try so hard. Right, it's really you. It's really.
Thank
good.
You, Uncle Rich. And I'm sure this is good advice.
Yeah.
That's what I write it down.
That's what I did. When I read radio stuff, I just didn't work that hard on it. And they won't have me back anymore. That's weird. And you won a silver Tony Award.
Yeah, that's the best you can get.
Yeah. Well, second
no
best.
No higher accolade
second
than
best
silver.
To bronze. Bronze. Well, I was going to ask if you were disappointed you didn't. We got the bronze the year before. Was it for this? I think it was.
Yeah.
Because
I was there not winning it.
Yes, that's right. I briefly interviewed you in that. It was 2014. You own that Sony Award forever now because that was the last Sony Award.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So you are the current silver Sony Award forever.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it.
As long
that.
As it runs.
Yeah, great.
Unless
good.
It comes back. You had 22,854 people apply for the 200 tickets for the last episode.
Yeah.
So that's quite a successful sitcom.
Yeah,
I mean, know they're free tickets, but even so, that's a good hit rate.
Yeah, no, that was extraordinary, and obviously there was a great big Benedict Cumberbatch shaped reason for that, but nonetheless.
Well, I think it's definitely part of it. Obviously, I wouldn't be foolish to say it wasn't, but I think that's the level of fandom you have for it. Did you do 26 episodes or 27 episodes?
I like to call it 26. Yeah. We ended up splitting the lot because, as you know, but others may not, they happen to be all... they're all named after the destination that it's set in an airline, and it's named after the destination the plane's flying to that week, and so I do an alphabet's worth. But then we ended up splitting the final episode, Zurich, into two episodes because half an hour wasn't long enough, and so it's sort of 27, but I think of that as a two-parter.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. So do you feel you can't, because couldn't you now go to places that start AA, BB, I mean, it's quite hard. Aaron's Hill you could do, that's in Somerset, that's the first one.
Oh, I see, it's starting AA. I was thinking more Addis Ababa.
Oh, you could do that as well.
Chipping Camden. I mean,
that would be
Let's
possible.
Let's all fly to Chipping Camden.
Well, in my system, when you get to Bubba, it gets quite hard to think about.
Your system works for one extra episode.
Or they could end in A. So you could go to...
That's true.
And then end in B, then end in C.
Yeah.
That would be nice. Then it's a mirror image all the way through.
Yeah. I mean, but to be honest, I didn't just go, if only there were more letters, I would carry this on. It was part of the reason I stopped there, but not maybe. The whole reason.
And so Benedict became famous sort of halfway through.
Yeah, that was extraordinary. So basically Sherlock started after series two of Cabin Pressure.
Right.
And then we did a Christmas special between series two and three. And that was the one where I arrived at the theatre and there was just a queue of teenage girls right literally around the block at the RADA Theatre in Cheney Street. And I'd never seen that in that location before. It was extraordinary. I've said this before, but I was terrified at that moment because I thought, this is going to be a disaster. They're all here purely for him. They've no idea what this sitcom is. They've probably not much idea what Radio 4 is. They're not going to be listening to the plot. They're not going to care about anything except, when he opens his mouth. And I was absolutely wrong, both then and subsequently. They were a lovely, intelligent audience. And they squealed when he said something vaguely sexy, but they also listened to Stephanie Cole and laughed at her jokes as well. They were great and continue to be great. They have conventions now. They have international conventions. This year's was in Berlin.
Are they doing them in alphabetical order? Are they doing each convention? the convention
I can't
too.
Believe they missed that trick.
I mean, it's a very good cast. I mean, you tried to do it for the TV, or you're saying that
we had a go, but it's never been officially turned down, but it's looking less and less likely.
Because they're very strong characters. They're really brilliant actors in it.
You.
And you are also in it.
Yes. Three brilliant actors and then this guy. I mean, you can imagine how much I felt that on the first recording, though. You know, in case you don't know it, as many of you won't, it's Benedict Cumberbatch, Roger Allam and Stephanie Cole. Now, that cast, even then, even before Sherlock, they could have, for instance, opened a new play at the National. You know, if you heard that, such and such a play will be starring, it's the three-hander with those three, you go, yeah, no, that sounds about right, perfectly reasonable. And they were all doing this stupid Radio 4 sitcom that no one's ever heard of because it's brand new, and I'm in it. There am I saying, yeah, I'm also one of the quartet of actors. So, yeah, I was a bit terrified.
But you're very good at it. It's very funny.
I wrote myself a comedy, I get to be the comedy idiot, so I don't have to do any acting, which is great. Except there's two episodes where I do have to do some acting, and both of which I play against the a recurring guest star, Timothy West, as my father, as my character's father. And so there's these two scenes where I sort of have to, and there's Roger and Ben next to me, and I'm trying to do my acting face. It was terrifying.
So you studied at Cambridge University. You did a dissertation on Thomas Hardy.
I did, yes.
Icons, Frames and Freedom in Jude the Obscure.
I'd forgotten the title, but what? Yes, it was definitely about Jude the Obscure. I know that much.
What is your favourite frame in Jude the Obscure?
There's this lovely big wooden one around the bit of Jude the Obscure you would like is where somebody flirts with Jude the Obscure.
Oh, yeah.
You know this?
No, I don't know.
By throwing a bull's pizzle at him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, they're all at work in the farm, and she thinks he's a bit of all right, so she expresses her affection by lobbing a bull's pizzle at him.
Yeah, they use them as whips.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's when I went to the Icelandic Penis Museum.
Ah, of course, yeah.
That's
well, this is why I thought of you.
I know, exactly. I do know all about...
I know who'll like this.
I know all about the genitalia of every animal, especially Icelandic ones. So, yeah, they
that's
have...
It's like a weird superpower.
Yeah. They use them to drive cattle.
Right, yeah, okay. So nice. Okay.
I think Emma Kennedy was... I was reading today. I think it was Jude the Obscure. Does he go to Oxford? Obscure. Does he go to?
Obscurely goes.
But she was.
On
she
obscure
was
route to Oxford.
She was inspired to go to Oxford because of Jude the Obscure.
Really?
To Oxford. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have a very nice time there.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised. Did she finish the book?
I think she did admit.
The moral of the story is basically: don't go to Oxford. Your children will kill themselves.
Why is he? I don't want to read the book. What's it about? Why is he called Jude the Obscure? Why is he Jude the Obscure? What's
he's
going
obscure
on?
Because he lives in rural Dorset and he wants to go to Oxford. And
what's his actual name?
It's Forley, I think.
Okay. Yeah. He did quite well. did better than I expected on that.
I may have made that up. No, I'm fairly sure it's Forley.
Were you in an episode of Family Guy?
I was. I still don't know why. I mean, obviously, someone dropped out. But even given... No, I mean, that's just an obvious fact. And, they only got me to do it 2 or 3 days before the recording. But even if somebody dropped out, there's so many people you go through before you got to me. And this really isn't false modesty. This is just, looking through spotlight and going, well, why not him? Why not him? But it was lovely. Yeah, no, I got a phone call. I was visiting my parents in Dorset because, like Jude, I'm obscure and live in Dorset. And I don't, but I live there, but I grew up there. And so I was back there visiting the folks. And I got a call from my agent saying, oh, you've got a casting for tomorrow. And I said, yeah, but as you know, I'm away, so I can't do that. Said, okay. It's the Family Guy, though. Oh, all right. Maybe I'll come in. And, it's a nothing part. It's an absolute... And this is the other thing that's surprising about it. They had... So it's a British episode. I think only a third of it. It's a viewer mail one. So it's only a third of it is... The idea is that Family Guy was also based on a British sitcom, like The Office, and so this is the original sitcom. It's a funny idea. And so they've got various... The British guest stars they have are Ricky Gervais, Chris O'Dowd, and Tom Hollander. And they've got this line, and they're all doing parts, and they've got this line where a continuity announcer basically says, and now the British, I think it's The Price is Right or something, and, no joke to it at all to introduce their little sketchlet. Yeah. Why they couldn't have got, Tom Hollander to do a voice, or, for goodness sake, Seth MacFarlane, who is already doing two British voices in that cartoon, to do a third British voice for that nothing line, I don't know, but I'm very glad they didn't.
Because sometimes you go on IMDb and think someone's put that in as a joke.
Yeah. Or there's two John Finnemores. Because there's a Victorian who wrote books about Robin Hood. And
I was
so
going to say, I found out about
that.
Him. Okay. I was going to say that you were the British school teacher and writer of a fictional novel and geography text... writing about Teddy Lester and his friends at Slapton for Boy's Own Paper, and you died on the 17th of December 1915 of heart failure.
this is very much the second act of my...
My favourite of your books in that regard was A Boy Scout in the Balkans. I'd really like to read that book.
My favourite is the series of travel guides for children he wrote called Peeps at Many Lands. So it's the title first. So it's John Finnemore, the author first. So it's John Finnemore peeps at many lands. And then each one is called John Finnemore peeps at Israel. Oh, there it is. He's and of course, what it actually means is John Finnemore is cheerfully and flamboyantly racist about Israel. Because it's 1880, why not? Or 1910 or something.
So was that when you found out about him? Was that a weird moment? Or did you know... He's not from your family or anything, is he?
No, he's there's no connection that I know of. I found out about him because my girlfriend at the time gave me a first edition of one of his books. Right. And it's a lovely... One of the school story ones, actually. Yeah. And it's one of those lovely ones with a chap in cricket whites catching a ball on the front that you see in pubs these days. And so I was really tickled with it and loved it. And then when I started to do this as a career, the egotistical part of me, which is quite a lot of me, got really pissed off because it means, for instance, on Wikipedia, I have to be John Finnemore, brackets, writer, and the other guy gets to be John Finnemore, brackets, author. I want to be the author. Oh, I just want to be John Finnemore. That is only one.
Do you worry that you might be him again, living life again, and you will die at the age of 52?
Constantly.
Of heart
yeah, well? Yeah. Yeah, it's become like a weird Woody Allen film style obsession.
Yeah. I hope I can live long enough to see you get to 52, and I'm going to be watching you on tenterhooks. It would be nice if you did. It would be, not, well, like be cheering, nice, wouldn't it?
Like recently this year, cheering the Queen through becoming the longest monarch. Yeah. Oh, I hope she makes it. I hope she makes it. Yeah, she's through.
I mean, I'd be sad you were dead, but it would be also really cool if you did die on the to the day.
Yeah.
Just be cool. Yeah. I'd go, oh, wow.
Just as I finish, John Finnemore Jr. peeps at Syria. That actually might be why I die. Certainly if I take the same attitude the original did.
And I was listening to you on the Now Show as well. Do you still do the Now
yeah,
Show?
Yeah, yeah.
I try not to listen to the Now Show if I can help it.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
But I'm only joking. But you get to do like long eight minute monologues of your own.
I mean, that's what's amazing about it. I really think that what is great about the Now Show is that it provides that. There's nothing really like it anywhere else, the little platform where different stand-ups or writers or comedians can just do 5 minutes on a story, on a something they find interesting that may or may not be a news story, and they, you know, you can do that in so many different styles. Everyone approaches it their own way, but there's a lovely. It's basically like having a newspaper column, but you get to act it as what you get to do funny voices as well. Yeah. No, I love it.
It's sort of weird to me that in England or UK we don't have the Daily Show.
God knows we've tried, but it never seems to work. I don't know why not.
It seems to be, that seems to... I was listening to a couple of them, but you're probably the most famous one you did was about the phone hacking, which is...
Well, I was so lucky with that one because... So the week the Millie Dowler story broke, the way the Now Show works is we meet on the Tuesday and sort of divvy up the stories and work out what the two main sections that Stephen Hugh do are going to do, and then anyway, so the story broke, I think, on the Monday or Tuesday, but at that stage it was kind of mostly still about a murdered teenager. It wasn't quite, certainly wasn't clear it was going to become as big as it was, and it wasn't really clear how to do it in a funny way. So they gave it to, they asked me to do it, and I said, yeah, I'm sure I can find something. And then, of course, as the week went on, it became the story of obviously the week and then really the month and the year. And so on the day that we were recording, on the Thursday, it was when it was really blowing up. And between me finishing the piece, writing the piece like an hour before we went on, in that hour, they closed down the News of the World.
Right.
And so I had to rush upstairs while everyone else was rehearsing on mics and just frantically rewrite it.
Yeah.
Because part of my piece was saying, they're going to close News of the World because they were going to anyway. Don't take that. They want you just to go, oh, no, yeah, hands up, but we've killed the naughty paper that did it and we're all nice now. Don't fall for that. And then they did exactly what I predicted and I had to rewrite it as, now they have.
But it's amazing. I mean, it's a very good routine, but it's also amazing the way that story has... They have succeeded and she's now back working in the exact same job. It's sort of what you warn at the end. You say, we have a chance to stop this happening.
And we didn't. Yeah,
and we didn't really... do it. And they've amazingly managed to... Rebecca Brooks has managed to get to the point where she is nothing to do with anything that happened.
I know.
And that's accepted. And Rupert Murdoch, through all of this, is sitting there as if none of his... I did a show about Page 3, and it's always... Rupert Murdoch was always on holiday when the decisions were made.
Right.
Going, oh, bloody hell, my editor's again doing... only there was some way I could stop them doing stuff. And so you kind of got this idea of this guy at the head of an organisation where he has no control over anything at all. So it's an astonishing thing. So it's really great to see proper satire being done. I don't know, I just think this
Well, that was
be
a one of the rare occasions as well where not only was the story big and important, but I actually felt like I had... And I often don't. I often not quite sure what I want to say about it, and I don't want to take the easy, you know, the route that will necessarily get the big round of applause on the night, because that's not necessarily the most interesting thing to say about it. But on this occasion, I did feel like there was something specific I could say that wasn't, you know, that was worth saying. Other times, when I don't feel like that, sometimes I just sort of do a half on one side and half on the other, which works as well. But there's something very satisfying about, for once, actually having... You know, actually being cross about something.
Yeah. Oh, it's on YouTube, so you can all listen to it. It's very, definitely worth a listen. I'll ask you an emergency question now.
Okay.
I've got some new ones.
Mm.
Yeah. but they're pretty good. I'll ask this one because this is from the Kickstarter guy. There's one I haven't asked, so there's someone paid to ask this question.
Okay.
He's called Steph, and he hasn't given his full name. I'm going to read you his full question. I was once so ill on Uzu that I projectile vomited into a woman's handbag. I probably shouldn't have read this one out, actually, thinking about it, given how I'm feeling.
Feeling all right.
That was 6 feet away. It was on its side, and I was on the floor. It looked like calzone. It's a long time before we get to the question.
Okay,
I can no longer drink or smell any aniseed-based drink without wanting to spew my ring. I worked in a nightclub in the 90s and the Sambuca craze nearly killed me. Thank you, Stefan, for this information. So, do you have a drink, food or thing that makes you want to be violently ill when it or a similar is in your vicinity?
I think the closest is liver. I think liver is the thing that I wouldn't, you know, whatever like sitcom situation you could dream up for where you've got to eat it to please your, you know, your granny or the boss or whatever, I think liver's the one where I just couldn't do it.
But cooked liver or just, I mean, raw liver's kind of disgusting, but he's cooked
I didn't
liver.
Even know you could, oh God, that hadn't even occurred to me. Do people eat raw liver?
They wouldn't eat it, but you have to handle it. It's a disgusting thing.
No, it's the cooked one. It's the way it dissolves in your mouth and the way it tastes of old coins and the way my mum... It does, though. It's got that horrible metallic, like, licking a battery taste. Oh, I can't stand it.
Yeah, it's weird. Back in the 70s, before you were alive, you had to eat a lot of entrails and viscera. There'd be steak and kidney pies. Well, steak is nice, but kidneys are really... It's not nice.
No.
In a pie.
No.
I mean, fucking hell.
Just five places where you could have put another bit of lovely steak.
It is.
Or even, you know, if what you're doing, obviously, is bulking it out so you don't have to use expensive steak, just put in a bit more pastry. I'd be fine with that. Just put in a little kidney-shaped piece of pastry.
Or an onion would be nice.
Or an onion. Delicious onion. Yeah.
Really horrible. God. UKIP want us to go back to the old days. They really should have. They haven't thought it through. It's the integration of a multi.
I bet they love
society.
A kidney. I bet you. I bet the typical UKIP voter has a plate of devil kidneys in the morning, like, you know, like he's Bertie Wooster.
Yeah, it's really horrible. Oh.
I've no idea what a deviled kidney is. What is deviling? Do you know what deviling is?
It doesn't make it any better. That's why.
I know.
I think probably the deviling is just cutting out something's kidneys. That's quite a devilish way to make
it. That is what the devil
would do. The animal is still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got no kidneys. You're going to find out this is going to be bad for you in a few hours. Okay, this is one of my emergency questions.
Okay.
Why do elephants have such low rates of cancer?
Well, I'm often asked this. I didn't know that they did.
They have 5% cancer versus 25%.
But then again, I didn't really know that. Obviously, I knew that dogs and cats get cancer.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
Do
most animals get cancer?
Well, most do. The naked mole rat doesn't really get much
cancer.
Does it
cancer. Not?
But I'm guessing because the naked mole rat probably dies quite quickly of other, other issues.
Of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm a naked... I'm not just a mole rat, but I'm naked. This is like every bad dream I've ever had.
The clothed mole rats are going past, judging
in their little three-piece suits. Oh, dear. Whatever's happened to you, Terence? That's how mole rats speak.
Yeah.
They all vote UKIP and eat devil kidneys. No, but I don't know about the elephants, I'm afraid.
Well, they don't smoke.
No, that's true.
So that probably helps. They have quite a healthy diet.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. They're mainly shot by poachers, so they don't get a chance to develop. And they also have 20 TP53 genes, which is like a smoke alarm, basically, to cancer. It kind of detects the cancer and wipes it out. You learn
this
stuff.
This is like a TED Talk.
It is. You learn stuff on this podcast, but you learn the same facts every couple of weeks.
Oh, right.
But that's the best way to kind of really get that home. Now, this is a conglomeration of two emergency questions. Would you consider having sex with a ghost as cheating on your partner?
Yes.
Would you?
I think the clue is in the term having sex with. Yeah. I think if you... So, obviously, I can see how the two questions must have been. If you accept that you can have sex with something... Yeah. Then by doing it, you are cheating on the person with whom you promised only to have sex with that person.
I promised only have sex with my wife as a person, but I haven't necessarily gone... I haven't said other... I'll have sex with them inanimate objects.
It's one of those things that don't need to be put into the contract. It's one of those, there's nowhere here does it say a dog can't play basketball thing. The test is imagining explaining that to your wife and seeing if she goes, fair enough, I should have put it in the small print.
Never made it. I don't think it's definitely not cheating for the ghost to have sex with you. Because it's till death us do part.
So the ghost is in the clear.
The ghosts can have sex with whoever they want.
Because
a lot of ghosts that have sex with you,
they fall into two main types. Right.
Well, a lot. I'd say the most of the ghosts that have sex with human beings essentially rape the human being. I don't think they don't. They certainly don't.
I wasn't aware of this epidemic, to be honest. This is the first
stories,
I've heard of this.
In the stories you hear, people say, I woke up and there was this, you know...
No, I've never heard that story.
Thing, and she was having sex with me. So, essentially...
Right.
You know, you could argue, I reckon, you could say, well, even if you did consent to have sex with the ghost, I think you could just tell your wife that the ghost had forced themselves on you. Because they're a ghost.
Yeah.
So I think you could get away with it. And then your wife or partner... would feel kind of sympathy for you, and you could get a few months of, sorry, I haven't done the washing up, but remember I had that thing
with the ghost. I'm still recovering, really, from the whole ghost assault.
And they'd have to be.
Now I think that's worth a try, really. Go for it.
If she catches me having sex, if she doesn't catch me...
Do you have a specific ghost in mind? It's a ghost you've got your eye on.
Well, there's quite a lot of... Sometimes you go to like a stately home and there's pictures, an oil painting of a very... You know, you see an attractive woman from the 16th century and you think, that's sad, I wonder if she's still... So if she then appeared... Ooh.
I wonder if she's got any unfinished business.
So, you know, I think there were a few that I'd... Marilyn Monroe, ghost of Marilyn Monroe came back. I think if the ghost of Marilyn Monroe came back and said, I want to have sex with you, you'd have to do that. You would just say, look, I'm married, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have sex with the ghost of Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I have to do it.
All
and
right.
I will tell my wife. I might ring my wife up and say, look, Marilyn...
Yeah, I think that was the way to do it. Yeah. Do I get a pass?
You can come and join in and watch.
Yeah, if Arthur Miller turns up, you know, there's one for you.
Good. That's a good emergency. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Well, since you ask me for a ghost story... Right, sorry, that is the closest thing I have to a catchphrase.
Okay.
I don't think I have, because I don't believe in ghosts. However, I have had the experience that people who say they've seen ghosts had, which is presumably some sort of waking dream. Yes, I saw an old Caribbean woman with a child in her arms one morning. Yeah. Sorry?
Could it just have been an old Caribbean woman?
There is that possibility.
Yeah. Where was she?
I was on a cycling holiday in Cuba, I was in the Caribbean, so, you know, it's Leeds.
I think it was just an old Caribbean woman.
It was in my hotel room, and I woke up, and I felt completely awake, and I saw this sort of... So she was... There were two single beds in the room, and she was kind of between the two single beds, sitting down, rocking slightly, holding her baby, and I wasn't scared. I was just didn't understand what I was seeing, and I watched it for, I think, about 4 or 5 minutes, and then I got up and wrote it down, just to, you know, I had some sort of memory of it, and then I sort of kept a careful check on whether I was going to wake up, you know, if I was going to go through that waking up, and as far as I remember, I didn't, but... I think that's what people who see ghosts must have, some sort of waking hallucination.
That is a ghost. That's definitely a ghost.
I don't believe in ghosts, though.
You wrote it down in case you forgot about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
what's happening in your life? Weird Caribbean old woman. I was once asleep on the floor in a dressing room on a tour when I was hungover and we'd been drinking all day, as we used to on the tour. I used to be like this all the time. And I was woken up by a hag sitting on me, trying to choke me.
Right.
Yeah, I'm possibly trying to have sex with me. I don't know. But that might be what she was into. And then she disappeared when I woke up.
But then, a lot of them, you know, a lot of the stories involve either waking up or being about to go to sleep. And
yeah.
Surely that's what's going on. I'm sure it was for me.
The ghosts know that, though, don't they?
Well,
so that
that's
when
true.
That's why they appear at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not stupid, the ghosts.
So what's the ghost's agenda then? Do they want us to know they're there or not?
They want us to be confused. It's just like a big
prank. Job done, ghosts. Job done.
They want to make us feel like we're ridiculous and idiots. I was also listening. You've got a new show out on the radio. It's quite a bit more serious. The Double Axe thing.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's more serious.
Well,
it's
a bit more. They're a bit more like plays rather than.
I suppose so. Yeah, they're. It feels to me like splitting the difference between the sketch show and the sitcom in that they're, so each one is a self-contained half-hour play and they're all for only two actors.
Yeah.
So. It's what I really like is being able to finish a story in half an hour, because obviously with the sitcom, which I love doing, and what's great there is you have developing characters that you can come back to, but...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
But you have to lead them more or less where they started at the end. You've got to care about something massively for half an hour and then more or less be at the same place at the start of the next episode, particularly on radio where you're expected listeners expect to be able to listen to any episode. I do. When I'm listening to the radio, I wouldn't want to be expected to know who these people are. I need to just want to. So it's quite an odd form, to write in. It's like quite a constraining sort of, it's almost like a poem form, like a villanelle or something, where you have so many lines and it's got that quality to it. So I'm really enjoying with these being able to come up with a story that massively changes their lives forever and then we never see them. I mean, they don't all have that, obviously, but they all do start somewhere and end somewhere quite different.
So I've listened. Is the first one out at the moment?
Yeah,
it's the first one with Celia Imrie and the guy who played Michael Palin in the.
God, wasn't he great in that? I mean, he's great.
Was.
It's Charles Edwards.
Oh yeah,
is his name? And that was an astonishing performance, wasn't it?
It was. Just,
I mean, they were all good. All the Python actors I thought were great in that show.
Yeah.
But there was something spooky about how he, because Palin isn't really someone who everyone does an impression of, is
no.
that? Anyone can do their bad John Cleese, and Darren Boyd did a really good John Cleese, but nobody even does a bad Palin.
No.
How would you do a Palin impression? But he was spot on.
Yeah, he does look a bit like him, which helps.
Yeah, that does.
But so you're kind of attracting very big actors to your work. Who else have you got coming up?
We've got Alison Steadman doing one, and John Byrd doing one, and
amazing.
Rebecca Front. So the thing is, with radio, you can get. Another good thing about it is that you can get really decent people to do it because it's only a day out of their lives. And actually, the more they're the sort of people who are doing film and TV a lot these days, the more actually being able to just turn up, not have to learn any lines, obviously, do it 3 or 4 times in front of an audience or not, and then, I'll go on their way. And they've done a whole play or a whole, like, you only need to do 3 days' work and you've done a whole series of a sitcom. And I think that makes quite a nice change for them.
Yeah.
You know, because on the film, they'll do like two minutes a day and most of that will be sitting in their trailer waiting for the planes to go past. Yeah. So.
What I find quite interesting about radio now, I think, in the digital age, where you would imagine radio might be sort of diminished, but it isn't. And, like, do you ever think about this, that when you listen to Six Music, Radio 7 Extra or whatever, and they're playing stuff from 1973?
Yeah, yeah.
Will people be listening to your sitcoms in 50 years' time? There's no sort of reason why not. You know, I really enjoy when Navy Lark or something. There was one with the guy from Richard Beckinsdale. Is that his name? Yeah. With him and a baby called Baby Albert, played by Beryl Reed or someone like that. No, it's not even Beryl Reed. Does anyone know who it is? It's such an obscure sitcom. It's called It's Me and Albert or something it's called.
Oh, right.
And it's Richard Beckinsdale from 1970s.
I'm quite good on obscure radio comedy, but yeah, I've never heard of it. Yeah.
Oh, damn, it's going to annoy me now, but never mind. But yeah, so it's kind of weird. I mean, it's weird that sometimes things from 1993 that I'm in are on the radio. Yeah. And that's quite a long time ago.
Well, what's weird and also lovely for me is knowing that increasingly people tell me that their kids really like my radio shows. And sometimes, you know, like I meet kids, I did a stage show recently and it was child friendly. And so some children came and I met them afterwards and they kind of quoted bits of Cabin Pressure at me and got me to sign stuff. And you think, well, whether it's good or bad, because of the nature of childhood, they'll remember, you know, if they loved it that much and learnt bits of it, they'll still be able to quote that. They'll be quoting that at university and they'll probably quote it all their lives. Even if it's rubbish, it's in there, just like the Goons is for me, or whatever. You know, that was before my time, but my dad played me a lot of it, and so, you know, that's just in there. I'll tell you what, though, for me, one of those main things is the day-to-day and on the hour. Yeah. That was the thing, because that was the first thing I discovered, one of the first things I discovered for myself. You know, my dad didn't introduce me, you know, my dad introduced me to Monty Python, but On the Hour was something that I heard and was mine and that I loved. And so, yeah, I've got bits of that just hardwired into me. Thanks.
Well, really, someone last night told me, he's quite a big executive. He used to work on Vista Fund, running enough, but he still says to his boyfriend, "You am a twat," which is something I said. You know, and they've lost the... It's like almost like the genesis is lost. It's just become a thing they say. So that's kind of interesting. Now, are you aware of the Dirty Britcom Confessions website?
Oh, God. Only because at a Christmas party, like my friends and I have this meet for dinner before Christmas, and a sort of friends version of a Christmas dinner, and somebody we do each other crackers, and someone put some of them in my cracker. I hadn't heard of it before, and I was mortified. Am I going to be mortified?
Yeah,
now?
I think you are. I wasn't going to bother looking for you, and no offence. I've had people on, like Diane Morgan the other week. I thought there's going to be a lot of filthy stuff about Diane Morgan on. No one's had a fantasy about Diane Morgan, which I find unbelievable. And that is the highest compliment I can pay. But John Finnemore has just fucking hundreds of them. I'll just see how you feel about this.
I going to feel about it.
See if you're up for it. Thinking of John Finnemore making me come with just his fingers, soon wanting to taste me after, eating me out until I come with his mouth on me, thighs pressing nicely against his fuzzy face. Won't like you at the moment,
not
clean
so
shaven
now.
At the moment. Fingers slightly tugging his hair as he licks until I've come down. He holds me close.
It's just a novel.
Not expecting reciprocation, but I do so want to, and bring him to climax by hand. I'd find that disappointing.
She said
we're not even finished there. Yeah. Done a lot of work there, John.
I put my fuzzy face to good use there.
And then a little hand job. Once you're over 16, hand job's the worst. I mean, even doing it to myself now, I find quite boring. I never thought that would be the case.
Just have to pretend you're a ghost.
But so, maybe if I could actually inject my arm so it died.
Yeah, you should do that. Yeah,
just, it would literally be a ghost.
Yeah.
That would make it more enjoyable. But it's, you know, it's not great, is it? It's not a hand job. Is not a great way of... Anyway, it's not finished.
What?
My name on his lips as he does so. So she's...
Okay.
I think it's a girl. She's wanking off and you're going, ooh, Sandra. Oh, oh, it's just not as good. Especially like a what? I can imagine like another guy could do it quite well, but like a woman hasn't had enough experience to do the hand job efficiently. I don't really like having my foreskin yanked back as far as it'll go. I know a lot of men like that. Do carry on doing that, ladies. It's just me. I don't. When they really, just when they squeeze it, I don't like that. So that wouldn't work for me. Okay, it goes on.
Richard, our session's nearly up for this week.
He kissing me sweetly after he holds me tight. We dozing off in each other's. I've written, but we dozing off in each other's arm. That person can't even write.
That's nice. I like that bit.
Yeah, you like that. That I mean, there's sort of sweetness to that.
Yeah.
This is another one.
Good, good. I was hoping there would be.
Frenzied, primal, throwing each other against every surface, hair
every
pulling.
Every surface?
Yeah.
Crikey.
Gasping. I just can't.
A ceiling? I mean, that's a lot of surfaces.
I just can't. I'm not. I'm
or
not
does she mean different textures? You know, yeah, throwing me against, you know, sawdust and then pebble dash and then all the surfaces.
Yeah, every
marble.
Surface. Hard pounding, daytime quickies and exquisitely, excruciatingly slow, spoony morning sex with John Finnemore, heaven.
Well, it does sound nice.
I don't imagine you. When I'm imagining having sex with you, yeah. I don't imagine you being all that. I just think I think you'd be quite straight up and not do stuff like that.
Well, thanks a bunch.
I think you'd be quite. I picture you as quite.
So you didn't think I'd be on this site, and you don't think I'm any good in bed.
I don't think that's not what I think about when I think about you.
All right. Wow.
I would totally.
I'll prove you wrong. I will not prove him wrong.
I would totally kneel in front of John Finnemore, sucking him and licking his cock and let him come all over me. That's just one of mine.
That's a delightful one.
let's see if there's so many. There's so many in here.
Feel free to skip some.
No, I have skipped one. I want to be John Finnemore's wet-nosed cub. Does that mean, is that a reference to something?
Yeah, that's a line from Miranda, which okay. I pop up in as a guest star.
Is it a sexual role?
No, no, it's a utterly. It's a me and Margaret playing her revolting friends who are firstly very lovey-dovey and then awful baby, you know, people who have just had a baby and the first people who ever invented it. That sort of character.
Yeah, I hate those people.
Oh, those bastards always going on and on and on about their boring child. Don't know if you've met anyone like that.
Here's another. This one I quite like. Before I'm 30, I would like to spend an entire day in bed with John Finnemore. It's like that's like one of those bucket list things. That's in the list. You must climb Mount Kilimanjaro, do a parachute jump, spend a day in bed with John Finnemore.
That's a reference to a sketch I did about those lists and how horrible they are and how I don't. You know, the last thing I need is some pressure to go to Bali or to go swimming with sharks. You know, that's anyway. So yeah, that's what that's. All about.
I get aroused by John Finnemore in a dressing gown. I mean, I could go on.
I mean, don't feel you have to.
I might do. Sometimes when John Finnemore gets insomnia, he stays up doing a Q&A on Twitter. I can think of more fun things he could be doing, and I'll happily volunteer to join him next time he can't sleep.
Scrabble. She's talking about Scrabble.
It could be that. So, you know, just be aware that... As you're
I've got
doing
options.
Those Q&A.
That's good to hear.
Just ask, you know.
I mean, do they come with emails? I'm not interested.
The thing I don't really understand about this website is most comedians, if you just say, can I throw you against every surface and suck your cock, they'll go, yeah. Most of them will go, yeah. So you don't have to worry too much about it. And you've been on I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue. That
was amazing.
Full.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, terrifying, but they were lovely. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, as I was saying, growing up with radio comedy, and that was absolutely one of my favourites, and to be on it. And then I've been on it twice now, because once I was sort of on it properly, as it were, and then I stood in at last minute when Barry Cryer had an ear infection. He was fine, but he couldn't do it.
That's the good thing about that they're all so old. there will be a lot of chances to sit in. And...
But because that was at a moment's notice, that meant that I got to do a Hamish and Dougal sketch that Graham Garden had written with Graham Garden as Angus and Dougal. And, you know, can you imagine? That was absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Cool. Where'd you get your crazy ideas from, though? Where do you...
My crazy ideas.
How'd you come up with all that stuff? Where's it... How does it... Was it drug? I mean, drugs? Do you think wild ideas?
Well, I mean, firstly, as you were hinting earlier, my ideas aren't that crazy. You know, how do I come up with my dull pedestrian ideas about sketches in shops? Well, no, I mean, mostly the dull answer is mostly just by that being the job and sitting down with notebooks on trains often and trying to come up with ideas very rarely.
Yeah, but where do they come from then?
Where do they actually come from?
How do you come up with them?
I was in a pub garden. Is this a serious? I can tell you how.
No, it isn't. But tell me, nothing serious. But you know, like, sometimes it.
Well,
leads
this is
to...
interesting because this is a three-legged dog that gave me two different sketches.
Okay.
Okay. So I was in a pub garden trying to think of ideas, and three-legged dog ran past, sat at the bottom of a tree, and sort of quivering of excitement because there was a pigeon at the top of a tree, and he was just sort of quivering, looking up at them, and it just seemed to me like he was saying, if only I had my other leg, I would get you. And so that struck me as funny, and so I wrote that down, and then nothing came of it, because that's a funny thing to have noticed, and maybe if I was a stand-up or wrote for a stand-up, I could have made something out of that, but there's no real way of putting that into a sketch. And I'm going to condense this down, but basically I just sort of, what was funny about it is the sort of unknowingness of anyway, it eventually came into, one was through one page became a sketch about Quasimodo and how Victor Hugo sort of coming back to the cathedral and saying, Quasimodo, I've written a book about you. Oh, I'm so honoured. I've taken all those tales and I've written them up into, oh, this is wonderful. And I've given you the first edition as a gift of my new book, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. You called it what? And then the other one became a sketch about a dog waking up in the vet and going, oh God, I'm here again, this awful place. Oh God, last time they took my, no, it's fine. But you know, they sort of, oh God, I've done this wrong because I've missed up the setup. But it was about how a dog who's had one leg amputated for very good medical reasons because his owner loves him and he's paying a lot of money for it, how he'd feel when he woke up and went, oh, what? So I have really, really massacred telling that sketch.
That's good.
That's where I get my ideas from, three-legged dogs.
Yeah, mainly from... I have a lot of ideas that I can't... Nearly all my ideas, I think that'd be a good episode of Man Down with Greg Davis. The other day, had a Waitrose delivery.
Doing okay.
The guy... And it came really early in the morning. I'd forgotten it was coming to the door. And the guy ran the doorbell, and I've got, an ants phone thing. So I said, hello. And then it was just this, a zombie going, and I was going, so, hello, I can't hear. And then I saw his hand pressing against the glass. And I was going, what's going on? And then I kind of remembered it was the delivery, and I went to him, and it was a deaf guy delivering And then he was going, I'm sorry, I'm deaf. And I was going, oh, God, no, I'm sorry. I was just, it was really early in the morning, I was confused. And that kind of real embarrassment of, you know, some, but then actually genuinely scared, thinking, not that it was a zombie, but that someone was attacking my hand. I don't know why he put his hand on me. It was just so, Because I think he also just knocked on the door.
That makes you think he knew a little bit about what he was doing.
And what we once went to, and this is, we might cut this out, Dave, but this would be a very good Greg Davis episode. We went to a solicitor to have a will made, and about halfway through, I noticed that the solicitor had one really massive hand, really massive. Seriously, just this big hand. And then I was looking at my wife and going, that big. And then you're not wanting to mention it because you know what it's about, but then it's just like you're in a sketch.
Yeah.
And there, you know, and I think, you know, I can imagine Greg Davis, for example, or someone like that being in that situation and finding it funny.
Yeah.
But then discovered that it was some complication. I looked afterwards, it's some complication from some awful cancer that leads that to. So it's not at all funny, but it's sort of weird when suddenly halfway through a conversation with someone you notice something like that, and then you don't know what to.
Yeah.
That's where I get my crazy ideas from. But we might cut that out because that's probably too much information. She might.
If we're cutting, then cut out me trying to explain one of my sketches
backwards
as well.
That's staying. She's probably dead now. She did a terrible job on the will, I have to say. She genuinely did. We never got it in the end. She was awful. If you go to that woman, you'll know who it is. I'll ask you. I thought I had some more new. I've got lots of questions about. I mean, this is now getting untopical. Have you ever put your genitals in the mouth of a dead animal?
I have not had that honour. No.
Living animal.
No, sorry. I mean, maybe you're right about me being very bad in bed, yeah. very unadventurous, but no.
A human being is an animal, so you just admitted you've never had oral sex. Sport is intrinsically stupid. Discuss.
Well, there's not much to discuss, is there? I mean, it just is. Yeah, I mean, it is intrinsically stupid. I mean, it appears to be the rugby is still happening. Mm. The rugby's been going on... all year, for years. I can't remember a time before the rugby. It's just always been rugby now. We live in a time of rugby. And I mean, no, it's not intrinsically stupid. But I don't understand why it's one of the most important things. I don't understand why it's like the back page of every paper and the whole channels. And no, I don't get that. It's a game. I love games.
Yeah.
But you don't get... Yeah, why isn't Scrabble there?
Yeah, I like Scrabble. I think Scrabble should be televised more. The
thing
playing
is, I wouldn't watch it if it was. I don't really get sport.
I thought in the Rugby World Cup, like England just lost to Wales in that game. It was really close. And if they'd won, they probably would have gone through. And if they lost, they just made one, like, they had one really close game, and everyone's going, oh, England are rubbish. They nearly won a game and then they didn't quite win it.
I know.
Gives, cut them some slack.
And it's just when you stop, arbitrarily when you stop, you know. Yeah. But I know it's not, and I know this is, like schoolboy whining, but yeah, it does. I can't really get it. I suppose it's because it's so badly plotted. Obviously, when you see a good one, it's amazing. When you see, every so often, if it's a World Cup or something, I'll get into it. And when you see a good one, it's great. And you see, oh, now I finally see what all the fuss is about. And then you watch another one and it's a 0-0 draw. And there's no plot. You know, there's no... you think, well, I could have watched a movie. That was 90 minutes. And nothing... I don't mean that nothing happened. Even if stuff happens, it didn't make a good story. I wasn't satisfied by the end. The underdog didn't either win or... tragically, you know, or they did, but it was just random. It felt, unearned.
Good. If you had to go on a week's holiday with one of the puppets from Spitting Image, which puppet would you choose? And remember that the puppet would choose the holiday destination. Do you remember that?
Oh, of course, yeah. Those
are...
you're right to say remember that, because I've always known the rule, but I had forgotten.
So it would be like... Obviously, the Spitting Image puppet isn't alive. It's not ridiculous. We're not living in a fantasy world.
No.
The operator and the impressionist would accompany you on the holiday, but they would you would never be able to talk directly to them.
Okay.
They would only address you through the puppet. And if you attempt to interact with them in any way, they would just pretend they weren't there.
Okay.
But they would be there.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know that, you know. To all intents and purposes, if it was Neil Kinnock, Steve Coogan would be in the room doing the voice and keeping up the conversation, but you couldn't go, hey, Steve, what about the trip? How was that? You couldn't do any of that.
No, you could only talk to Neil Kinnock.
Hey, what are you saying?
Right.
That
sounds like a dream holiday, certainly.
Yeah. But you don't have to take Neil Kinnock, but you can take...
No, okay. And when you say they make the decision, who? I mean, the impressionist or the puppet?
All working together.
All right.
In character, they will be living in character.
All right, because basically I'm taking a very cynical attitude to this. I'm just going to try and get the nicest holiday I can out of it, because there's nothing that appeals to me about going on holiday with two people who won't talk to me and a rubber puppet that will. But if I can pick the one who'll take me to, you know, St. Lucia, then... That's the way to profit from this situation.
Michael Winner.
I mean, happy with Michael Winner. Princess Diana, maybe.
Yeah.
Who did those voices? Because now I have to... you're right. I don't get to spend any time with the impressionist.
It doesn't matter who the impressionist, because they would just
Alan Wicker. I'll go with Alan Wicker.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully we'll go on a whole tour of lovely places.
It would be someone pretending to be Alan Wicker who wouldn't have the knowledge of Alan Wicker. But would just...
I don't need the knowledge. I just need the ticket, basically.
Okay,
I'm just after the free holiday. I'm taking a very joyless attitude to this joyful question.
In a way, it's a stupid question, in a way.
Oh, no.
So
don't be too hard on yourself, Richard. I think it's a very intelligent question. Okay. I've just addressed it very badly.
Okay. Let me just check there's nothing serious I have to ask you, and then I might ask you some other stupid stuff.
Okay.
I haven't got a watch at the moment. It's all right, we're doing all right for time. We could do a lot more of this. You were on Only Connect.
Oh, yeah, I was. Yeah.
How did you get on?
We lost, but only on a tie break.
Okay.
Yeah, which was disappointing. But we solved the wall. We completed the wall and got all the.
It's quite hard, Only Connect. I've become.
It's easier when you're a celebrity one.
Is it?
But yeah, it's still quite hard.
I've become obsessed with Tipping Point.
I haven't seen Tipping Point. No.
I love quiz shows, and yeah. In fact, what I quite like having a baby, and I've looked after the baby on Thursday. I don't know, go on about it. But it's quite good because, you know, she can mainly look after herself. I mean, last night we just left her, you know, she's asleep, so yeah, no, can't wait. I looked after all day and I just went for lunch. I had a nice slap up lunch on my own, had a beer. It was great.
Lovely.
And then I went home and watched quizzes. It's kind of what I want to do as
I see, but it was
life.
All legitimised because you were actually, look, I'm doing daycare.
Yeah, I'm
looking after a baby. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
So, if you get home at about 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you can just watch quizzes.
Right.
Pretty much through to 8 o'clock. I mean, if you go on to Challenge TV, you can do it all day, but that's cheating. So the Tipping Point's brought me a bit closer to that because that's on quite early. Do you watch Tipping Point?
I'm afraid not, no.
I'd really want to do a celebrity version. I've talked about it before in podcasts, and I was quite disparaging towards it, and I regret that now. You know what it is? Like those two, you know, in the fun fairs where you put 2p in a machine and there's shelves and they move and then you get 2p's coming out. It's that. But
it's not. What, on television?
Yeah. But with quiz questions thrown in to decide how many. Right. There's a lot of luck in the game, I would say. It's based on quite a lot of good fortune.
Okay.
So stupid people can get through to the final.
But they didn't they do heads or tails as a quiz format? I mean, once you've done that, you think, well, all satire of stupid quiz shows is impossible because somebody did make a half-hour show about tossing a coin.
But in a sense, all quiz shows are just heads or tails, aren't they?
No.
Why don't we just cut it down to its. But Ben Shepherd does an excellent job on Tipping Point. I've been disparaging about it. I want to make it clear. I'd really love to go on. Because you've got to. My favourite bit is you've got to discuss what. As it's going down, because that's quite a boring bit of telly. You have to.
Sounds like a collection of boring bits of telly.
He says, what do you think's going to happen? And they always go, I don't know, really. It depends on where it falls and should we just wait and see what happens? No, what do you think? What do you think? Is that a good place? Yeah, it could be. Hard to know until gravity's taken its
effect.
Well,
I gather that's quite a lot of deal or no deal, isn't it? As well, it's just what do you think's in the box, what's likely to be in the box, what won't be in the box, given what was in the box last time, and you're just...
Yeah.
I mean, we won't know until you open it. Sorry, that's like a really outdated piece of stand-up that I didn't even do. But
I went to whoever makes Deal or No Deal, mm-hmm. and I suggested doing like a late night, like a poker commentary over the top of it.
Nice.
To replay it late at night with some people, actual mathematicians.
Yeah.
Saying, Noel Edmonds says that box 13 always has a low number in it, but there is no justification for that. Yeah. It has happened. It hasn't even happened that much in the last few games.
Yeah.
I would watch that.
Yeah.
That's not true. It's equally likely to be in any of the boxes.
Right.
They have not made a foolish decision because you're offering them some free money, so it doesn't matter if there's more money in their box. They have still won.
Right.
Because he did it. Did you see the episode where Noel Edmonds was? Did Sarah Millican was the host and Noel Edmonds was the guest? Because she should have really fucking laid into him. Because every time. Well, if they get to the end of that game and someone's got, oh, you took £15,000 and there was £20,000 in your box, so you've lost. And he did the same thing. You know, there was no kind of... You don't know, do you? The decision's made before we know the full answer.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was like, do you want £50,000 or £25,000? And you said £25,000. He goes, you have lost there. You should have chosen £50,000.
You have lost the game of remembering which numbers are larger than other numbers. Remembering the order numbers come in. That's the game you've lost there.
Are you more the snooty intellectual mastermind?
It's
only
not
connect?
That so much. It's just that I get really... I've got a horrible guilt. Just watching television when the sun's up just makes me feel... I mean, of course, I enjoy it like everyone else, but I don't do it because it makes me feel so guilty it's not worth it.
Yeah.
The awful, you know, crushing, oh, God, I'm wasting my life feeling.
Have a baby and then you can watch the sun.
Well,
or just get really old. Okay. So I'm really looking forward to being really old because I'm just going to play Adam's Family Pinball in the morning, all morning on my iPad, and then watching quizzes in the afternoon. Sounds good. A Sudoku. Or Kikurus, I like. Do you like Kikurus?
No.
Don't know how to say it, but it's... like a Sudoku, but you have to add the numbers up.
Okay.
I'll show you later. It's good.
I like a crossword. I like a cryptic crossword. They're fun.
No, it's too hard.
No? Okay.
That is much. That is much.
This date is going really badly.
That's much. And you work quite a lot, of course, with future guest and past guest David Mitchell, who's on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so you wrote. Do you write together on the soapbox thing? Is that was finished?
Yeah,
now,
the soapbox. Yeah, I think it's. I mean, again, we never really decided to finish it, but I think it's probably gone away now. And that was great because it was such a nice way of working. Is basically we go to the pub together. I would get him worked up about stuff. I would write down all of the the effortlessly funny things he just says about because he's got that kind of mind, which is why he's so good on panel shows and so on. Yeah. The first way, which is so unlike me, that the first way he expresses it is. It's terrific. And then he has to kind of struggle to remember how he put it first. Yeah. Whereas with me, I just have to rubbish out something like I've been doing all evening. And then, what I won't have the luxury of doing is going back and saying, oh, no, there was something in that long, boring story about, whatever, and refining it until I make it funny. So, yeah, I just get David annoyed about tiny things, write down everything he says in increasingly drunken handwriting, and then go away and sort of shape them up into 3-minute pieces, but it's all his stuff. It's all his ideas.
So that's where you get your crazy ideas from
David Mitchell. Yeah, that's where I get David Mitchell's crazy ideas from. I get them from David Mitchell. Yeah, it seemed the obvious place to go.
And you've been writing you write sort of sketch shows. You wrote for the one Ronnie, which is the most tragic title for a sketch show there has ever been.
I know. And then they started trying to do it with other. I don't think it lasted very long, but they did. I think they did the one Jasper for Jasper Carrot, and you think that makes no sense at all. It was tragic, as you say, when it was the two Ronnie, but at least they were called that.
It'd be quite good if that became the system now, that everyone had to be called the one, the one Richard Terry. Yeah.
But it was. They did. I think they did the one Lenny and the one Jasper. The show's perfectly good, but the title's not so good.
Did you meet Ronnie Corbett when you were writing for it, or did you just write it and hand it in, and then that was the end of that?
I was sort of invited, but I couldn't go, sadly. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of that anecdote.
Yeah.
The time I didn't meet Ronnie Corbett.
Looks like a prick, though, doesn't he? Looks like.
I hadn't heard that. I hope not.
No, he seems very nice. It's very. I love these. I love the old guys who keep going.
Oh yeah.
But they're going on that. But they're taking all our work, aren't they? Nicholas Parsons. Nicholas Parsons didn't start doing Just a Minute till he was like my age.
Yeah.
And has been doing Just a Minute for 40 years. I mean, that gives you some kind of hope, doesn't it? That this could still be going on in.
I mean, literally this interview. Strap in.
I think we may have got everything we need.
Oh, good.
I liked your sketch about the sun wearing sunglasses. That was amusing.
Thank you very much.
Tell you that.
Thank
you. That made me laugh this morning.
I liked your sketch about the cool teacher years. that made me laugh. Well. We're just saying sketches we like.
What happened? You wrote a sitcom for Robert Lindsay and Richard Griffiths.
Yeah.
And I know half the reason why that probably isn't going on at the moment.
Yeah.
But did that was broadcast as a pilot, was it?
No, was broadcastable, as it were. If they picked up the series, then the pilot we made would have gone out as part of the series. So it was all, proper. But it didn't happen.
No.
Yeah. So
it's so hard, isn't it? I mean, we were talking about this backstage because I've written a lot of TV. I mean, it's just very hard to get TV shows on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, it's amazing when you get to that stage. It's all the excitement. Oh, we're filming.
Yeah, yeah.
And, oh my God, we've cast Robert Lindsay.
Once you are on set and people, whole teams of people, and it seems actually, you know that this is only a pilot and it might not happen, but it seems so real. And there's so much, money and time being spent on it and so much effort. You think, yeah, but it's going to happen now, isn't it? I mean, they won't just throw this away. Yeah, they will. They will. If they decide they don't want it, they will just.
But there's going to be disappointment at some point. You get the series, then you do another series, and they go, we don't want any more. So you're going to feel that kind of abject misery.
One of the reasons, not the main reason, but that was what was nice about Cabin Pressure. I decided I wanted to pick when it finished, because otherwise it either doesn't get recommissioned or it starts to, go off and people say they don't like it as much as they used to, or you get sick of it, or, so it was nice to say.
27 episodes is a good whack. I mean, I feel like the people are a bit I mean, I wrote Time General Please, where we did 37 episodes.
God, you were writing like 2 episodes a week or something.
Well, I was writing, I wrote an episode a week.
I can't imagine doing that. How did you possibly do it?
I had to, because otherwise everyone else had nothing to do. So it was insane, because...
Like, actually, from nothing, from you had to come up with you started without a plot, and you finished with a script ready for them to read.
I did, yeah. Because they gave us 9... They commissioned 15.
Yeah.
Then halfway through the series, they gave us another 9. So the first few I'd written with Al, or we'd been in the room together. Then we'd realised once we got going, it was easier for me to do it and email him and say, send me a joke about this.
Yeah.
But by that stage, he was... We'd film on a Thursday, I think.
Mm.
And I would be... Well, basically, I'd finish the scripts on Tuesday. And so then the next day, I'd start writing the next one. We'd have a read-through of what I had on Friday, which was usually quite bad.
Right.
Then I'd go over the weekend and work that out. And then on the Monday... that we'd do a read through what I had,
right?
Knock all the edges off it, and then I would give it to them, and I would then start on the next one on the Tuesday or the Wednesday.
Good Lord.
So for about 10 weeks. The good thing was, though, that meant what I was getting paid was my weekly wage, which was insane.
Yeah.
So I bought a brand new car with 1 week's wages. So it was sort of insane. But yeah, it was quite hard work. I don't know. Again, I couldn't do that now. I think we were talking about this backstage. It's just when there's a deadline.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You have to get stuff done.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know. That's why I'm like, if I've got time to do something, I'll just take all the time and do it at the last minute anyway. And I don't think the quality massive. Well, it was good because I'd done 15 episodes, so you knew all the characters and you knew how it worked, and there were kind of catchphrases and things that came in.
But still, plots. That's the thing that takes me all the time, and I can't imagine how you could come up with a. I don't think I could. Well, I could maybe plot it in a week, but
I
couldn't
tell you where
I
get my crazy ideas from.
If you would, I've been wondering.
The way I write, though, I don't like to really plot out in advance, so I can be surprised by the twist.
Okay.
And then I'll go back and rework it.
Yeah,
but so that you would work out something and then see where it went. And sometimes I was aiming for something, but often I wasn't, and that meant that. Especially when I was writing them in a week, which often meant the surprise was a surprise to me as well. Then it sort of occurred to you, so you'd write it as it was, which I do tend to write like that, and it's not a great way. It's not a good way to write, I don't think.
No, it works for some people, but I could never do it that way. I can't start until I've got the ending.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know.
But then I think sometimes, if you do that, then that's why you can, I'm not saying you, but one can end up with...
Formulaic.
Yeah, slightly absolutely. Formulaic stuff, because you're aiming for something, whereas if you don't aim for something, you might find something that's actually genuine.
Oh, absolutely. And, lots of great writers do it that way. Yeah. I think Evelyn Waugh said when he... Because he changed over the course
of... It is very like Evelyn Waugh, Time General, please. So this is... It's very similar.
He said something like, I had the facility when I was young to wind up my characters like clockwork and see where they went. And that just sounds like... impossible to... I mean, wonderful. I wish my characters would do that. But when I've occasionally tried, even like with, so with Kevin Pressure, where I had characters who I really knew inside out and I knew how they'd react to any situation. And so I do, I suppose, what you're talking about. Think of the premise, set them going, and they just sit there. They just talk. They just back and forth, and nothing would move, and no one would want anything, and no one would care about anything, and I just couldn't... Yeah.
Yeah.
Brain doesn't work that way.
No, that's why I felt once they were established as characters. I found the second series there was a bit short, the second series.
Yeah.
But I found it really easy to write. Whereas we were finished way in advance of everything. Really unlike...
What, your week? So your week writer, on Tuesday you were going, well, I'm more or less done now. So
I didn't write them in a week the same, but I think we wrote most of the scripts before the series began.
Right.
Which was quite... Even when we were doing the first 15, I was still working on them as we did. Because I like working with the actors. I like hearing the actors read it. And then when they read it, you learn. So much more. And they inject a bit, and sometimes they can't do it, so you take that joke out. But I think, like in Britain, I hear a lot of American writers saying, oh, I love the British system where they do 12 shows and they leave it at that. I sort of feel it's a bit lazy. I feel like if you've got great characters, you can come up with at least 30 or 40, and sometimes 50 or 60.
Peep Show is mostly written by two guys, and they've done 100 now. I mean, they're finishing it, but they've done 8 series. And
The Simpsons, the first, there's a good 120 episodes before that starts to not quite as good.
But, obviously the main difference is the Americans have got loads of writers working on it, but as you say, there are people... Well, Roy Clark wrote every episode of Last of a Summer Wine, and is still...
He did write every episode of Last Summer Wine when he wrote the first episode of Last God bless him. Anyway, look, we better go because I've got my main guest coming on now in the second half.
Good one.
We've been very much looking forward It'll be worth hanging around for that, John.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're not going to believe the stuff. Yeah. You've saved me talking about Time Gentlemen Please with him anyway, so that is good.
Yeah, you're going to really regret that you spent a big chunk of that talking about your career. That was bad time management. I mean, I was enjoying it. I was fascinated. But if I were you, I'd have kept that for the second half.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause to John Finnemore. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, John Finnemore. Yes, that's right. The music is my best. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square. You'd think I would know this by now, seriously. Thanks, I'm a bit hungover. Thanks to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us, they're very nice. And thank you to everyone from Go Faster Strike. Thank you to my producer, Dave Cripp. He's in his crib. And this is terrible. This is Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Strike production. Thank you for listening to it. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to help support us, go to gofasterstripe.com, buy a DVD, buy a book. That money will go to me. Buy a badge. That money will go to future internet content. Or you can come and see me on tour. I will get some of that money. That would be nice. Go to richardherring.com/happy_now/tour. And you can see if I'm coming near to you, most of these gigs will be in the spring of 2016. And the DVD of Lord of the Dance Settee should hopefully be out by Christmas. So go to gofasterstrike.com and see if it's there. And then buy it. It's the perfect Christmas gift for every member of your family. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.